Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It used to be that Muggsy was the one, and the Bobcat years were painfully long, and I was for the signing of Kimba. But then we beat the lottery's long odds. If he can be it, then we can do it. If we just believe it, he'll lead us to it. I believe he's our guy. I believe he can bring back. I hate that some couldn't watch him play, win some games so he will stay. I believe he can score. I see him knocking down Jordan's door. I believe he's our guy. I believe he's that guy. I believe he's our guy.
Oh my goodness, yo. Happy Friday.
Good afternoon, Charlotte. I have no idea how to talk after hearing that. The hack song of the week, the R. Kelly, I Believe I Can Fly homage. Welcome back, Stan Norfley. How you doing?
Let's just call that what it is. In a day that I feel some type of way, because we got to get into a former Hornets legend, that's on the move, and it doesn't make me feel good. We're going to get into this Kemba Walker thing, but I feel good. And that hack song right there, it just gave me the inspiration and motivation that I needed to bring Metroliner where they deserve. That's a virtuoso, Hacksaw Helbig.
That
Magnifico.
Yeah, that's let's just say, well done, Hacksaw. We'll get to his grade coming up at 5, but we got three more listens at 3, 4, and 5. And do not forget, you can send in your grades at any point, 704-570-9610.
I'm immediately going to the text line. I have to see this.
Hit us up on the text line of the Diamond Strike Twitter feed. Sometimes they're so bad, that means they're so good. But you mentioned it, the absolute glass shattering. I feel like Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump in the Eye of the Hurricane, where he's on top of the mast and just screaming, is that the best you got? That's what I feel like as a member of the NBA media, because every day they are just hammering us with the latest news, the news this morning. And there's so much to get to in it. The Celtics have traded Kemba Walker, their first-round pick this year, the number 16 pick, and a 2025 second-round draft pick to Oklahoma City for Al Horford, Moses Brown, and a 2023 second-round pick in what is essentially, if you were Boston, a salary dump in Brad Stevens' first major move as Celtics GM, Stan.
And that's exactly what this is. Listen. Kemba was extremely durable here. We know that. In his 8 seasons in Charlotte, Kemba missed just 35 games. However, in 2 years in Boston, he's missed 45, including 29 this year. He had the stem cell injection in that left knee last year. In the offseason, he did a special training regimen. This is about Kemba not being healthy enough and, quite frankly, being expensive on that 4-year, $141 million deal that Ainge gave him. Brad Stevens is saying, I'm going with my two young guys. Kemba, you got to move around.
And let's be honest about what this really is. Kemba's the fall guy. Kemba's the guy that you can say, that contract, that just didn't work out. The injuries are a part of it. It was Kemba's fault. We didn't get where he wanted to go. Which, to me, proves what my real concern was with Kemba when he signed in Boston. That is a, if you can win, you will be a legend in that town.
No doubt.
But if you don't meet whatever their expectations, and I'm talking about the Celtics, I'm talking about the Boston media, the Broston media out there,
Boston.
Then it's all on you. And Kemba, in replacing Kyrie Irving, gave them an out if he didn't win them an NBA championship. And the reality is they disrespected Kemba Walker with the way that they treated him since after the first year. The first year in Boston, he got them to the Eastern Conference Finals. So he got them right back. They were right back where they were previously. And their response was that halfway into the next year, Danny Ainge tried to get San Antonio to take his contract for the expiring contract of LaMarcus Aldridge. So for me, while I'm disappointed but not surprised that those trash bags in Boston treated a gentleman and one of the finer NBA players and more underrated players that we've had over the last 20 years in the NBA, while I'm upset they've treated him like trash, the reality is it is Boston and that organization who is trash looking for people to pin it on, and I think that even though OKC isn't the quote-unquote right place for Kemba Walker, I do think there's a chance, whether he plays a game there or not, that he will end up in a better spot. One more time for the cheap seats, bleep Boston and that Celtics organization for their handling of Kemba Walker.
Yeah, a lot there. I agree with you. Just given the relationship with now general manager, former head coach Brad Stevens for the Celtics, and general manager Sam Presti, they were both together at Butler. They have a relationship. That's what helped get this done. And this is uncommon. With the NBA Combine next week in Chicago, that, like the NFL Combine, that's typically an area that you start getting some movement and some deals getting done. This is pretty premature, especially one involving this much cash, this many people in picks, and ultimately a former All-Star in Kemba Walker. They're going to take care of Kemba, just like they did with Paul George, just like they're doing now with Al Horford. There's a history of Sam Presti and OKC, Chris Paul. They're going to get Kemba to a contender, to somebody that can, one, afford him, but to make things comfortable. I look at the OKC model, and I ask you, Nick, speaking of Sam Presti, and I got to pull this up because I thought this was very, very impressive, if I can get to it in time. Over the next 7 years, Oklahoma City has acquired 18 first-round picks and 18 second-round picks with all the wheeling and dealing that they've been done. That they've been doing.
Do you know what he's done? He's basically just been willing on to take on a bad contract.
Correct.
And then when a worse contract becomes available, and that's about perception, that's not about reality, because Kemba is a much better player at this stage of his career than Al Horford is, but the contract is perceived right now. He plays, what is so impressive to me about Sam Presti, is he plays the perceptions around the NBA, which are not often mirrored in reality. Look at the Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook trade if you'd like to see one. He plays those perceptions to the advantage of his team. And that, to me, 18 first-rounders in the next 5 years. And by the way, if Houston's pick comes in at five or worse, he's going to have two top five picks in a year with four or five transcendent-type talents.
This is excellent GMing. This is textbook for what you do when you're in their situation. And don't forget, they still have who I think is a guy that has some all-star potential in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So they can build around him with all this draft capital that they have. And at the end of the day, and I don't think we should sweep under the rug. When Kemba Walker's on the floor, he's still damn good. Now, he's not the all-star he was here in Charlotte, but Kemba Walker can still go when he's there.
Yep. And that's what's most interesting. This is why I say I think Kemba's going to end up in a good spot, because the playoffs aren't over. And you and I both know that once you get into the NBA offseason and teams start to look around and say, I don't have cap, like the Lakers are not going to have cap, like Dallas is going to have a limited amount of cap, all right, what are the moves that I can make that bring in an undervalued property? It would not surprise me if Sam Presti turns Kemba Walker, before Kemba ever plays a second in OKC, it would not surprise me if he puts him onto another market, somebody like Dallas or Milwaukee, Philadelphia, L.A., somebody who has title. Oh, Knicks, that's a great one. Somebody that has title implications and title needs. Right now, somebody that Kemba Walker can come in and is a moderate risk because of the contract, but a high reward because of what he can be. I don't even know. Now, if he does play, I'll tell you this. Kemba next to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a kid who's a decent three-point shooter from the numbers and who is a longer kid defensively, that would be very beneficial to Kemba's style of play and maybe reassert his value the way it did for CP3.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some quotes from Kemba, and I believe this was from last year's bubble, but I think the sentiment is still relevant today. Quick quote, it says, look, I came to Boston to be a part of those special runs, to be a part of high-intensity games and fans going wild, and I wasn't able to be a part of that, unfortunately. Just try to get right. I got to get right. And Kemba was never able this season to get fully right, even though he averaged still 19 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds. But that's just what he is at this point. I remember watching, and we haven't seen as much of a drop-off with CP3, but CP isn't what he once was, though he's still great. We've seen guys, at some point you just wear down, and you have to find a niche for yourself. And I think Kemba can still be that for a team like a Lakers, for example, just a piece if you can make the money work. So I hate that the optics are that Kemba's the fall guy, but that's not how I view him.
So I think that's interesting. In our pre-show, you asked a question of, like, what's Kemba's legacy right now? Because it was on the ascent going to Boston. As of right now, that narrative that you talked about has taken a hit at that, that legacy. And I think the reality is his legacy is good, not great. And I think it's not one for one for CP3, because CP3 was one of the best point guards in the NBA the second he walked in the NBA, and has just kind of been in situations that weren't perfect every time. They haven't worked out, and that has held him back. But Kemba's legacy at large will be defined on where he goes next. Because if he has to spend a full season in OKC, I don't think he has the time or health to go to a contender as in still somewhat of his prime, playing-wise, on the court, and save it. But if he gets dealt to L.A., either L.A. team, and can win a championship next year, then all of a sudden, I don't think he'll ever get the great acclaim that he should get. But I think it would at least solidify that next move, whatever that is, can be the thing that solidifies either a good legacy or a slightly better than that legacy.
And I don't think Boston can be so mad at him. He did get to an All-Star game there in Boston, right? They did get to a conference finals. Like, Kemba was worth – you know what? You know who Kemba is? And it's a little different, but it's pretty damn close on the way out. I think Kemba's Gordon Hayward. Right guy, good teammate, expensive, but has all the physical attributes that can be a key cog to getting you where you want to go. Then it's just about the rest of the machine doing its job.
704-570-9610. Kemba Walker, with that deal, also fair to say it's the official stamp that the Hornets won this deal, but
no
what
doubt.
The Kemba Walker deal that is.
They did,
but what's
yeah.
the what is Kemba Walker's legacy right now? We've got Chuck Cooperstein joining us coming up in 20 minutes.
Coop.
10 minutes to go ahead and give us the reaction to what's going on in Dallas. We've also got Asherod Blakely, NBA writer for the Bleacher Report, to give us the Kemba scoop and also get into LaMelo's future, so on and so forth. We've got Radio Tinder at 3:40. We've got the Jim Solania Gold Brick Ceremony at 4:40. And just a reminder, guys, we are so excited to announce the reopening of America and the return of Sky Show fireworks this 4th of July. Since 1976, there's no better way to celebrate the 4th of July than with family, friends, Charlotte Knights baseball, and the biggest and best 4th of July fireworks in the Southeast. It's the return of Sky Show, sponsored by Audi Charlotte and Universal Windows Direct. Sunday, July 4th at Truist Field in Uptown. Visit WFNZ.com for details. Chuck Cooperstein, the voice of the Mavericks, will tell us how dire the situation is in Dallas after an organizational implosion. Next on Sports Radio FNC.
Doncic is across the water at home, okay? And he's not happy, okay? He's not happy. This is not a good time in Dallas, man. And it's tough when it, you know, when it starts up high in the front office, you know, because the team has performed well over the last few years. They've been very competitive. You have a tremendous superstar. And they better get it together or he's going to be out.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfley. That was Eddie Johnson, longtime NBAer on Sirius XM NBA, talking about the situation in Dallas. Yesterday during the show, Rick Carlisle, longtime Mavericks head coach, announced he was leaving the organization, the only head coach to win a NBA title as Mavericks head coach. And then that was on the heels of a report that Luka Doncic was unhappy with the fact that Donnie Nelson, who had been their longtime GM, had been excused and there had been a parting of ways there. The speed of what has happened in Dallas is what is most just kind of, I don't want to say insane because I don't think that's fair, but just incredible to me at how, I don't want to say dire, but how serious things have gotten in Dallas in the span of a couple weeks.
So I lived in the Metroplex, as they call it, the Dallas-Fort Worth DFW area. I lived there for 7 years and have gotten to know a lot of, you know, Mavericks and Cowboys and, along with a few Rangers. The point being is, I try and stay locked in to what's going on, and particularly for the Mavs standpoint. The Mavs take a lot of pride in keeping their house in order. I mean, Cuban has done a great job elevating and putting resources and elevating the brand and scope of the Mavericks, ultimately culminating in a championship with Dirk Nowitzki and that crew. But with the, you know, sexual assault stuff and all of that a year or two ago and now this, I don't know what the hell is going on over there.
Yeah, it's tough, and we're going to get Chuck Cooperstein, the Dallas Mavericks play-by-play guy, also with 103.3 FM in Dallas, on to talk about this here in just a few moments. But I think we in the NBA can go to the extreme, right? We can go to the, oh my gosh, there has to be dramatics here. We can do that pretty quickly when situations like this flare up. And a fair amount of the time, if the player loves the market or if the player has good relationships outside of the one or two things, it can be smoothed over. I think the reality is, from the outside looking in, we just don't know what that relationship is between Luka and Mark Cuban, the Mavericks owner, and we don't know how deep those ties run. So to go ahead and get that perspective, we're going to go ahead and welcome on the voice of the Dallas Mavericks, also again 103.3 FM in Dallas, where he is part of that broadcast team. He is Chuck Cooperstein, a NBA legend, a basketball legend, on the Technicom hotline. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. How you doing?
Cool. Good afternoon, brother.
We're doing really well. It's a Friday. There's sunshine. What more can we ask for? I'm curious, because we just kind of talked about the fact that what's going on in Dallas has been a little sensationalized. How much of what has happened to this point, Donnie Nelson no longer being the GM and Rick Carlisle stepping down yesterday, how much of this has been in the works for a while, and how much of this is about the way the playoffs ended for Dallas?
Well, I mean, I guess it's the cop-out answer to say it's a little bit of both. Because clearly, ever since Bob Bulgaris came to the team at the start of the 2018-19 season, you know, he had been able to, you know, gain the trust of Mark Cuban. And you know, with the information that he was providing, and you know, Donnie felt that you know, that Bob may have been overstepping his bounds as far as, you know, personnel and who should be playing and that type of thing, as opposed to simply providing numbers. And so you know, I think that there was some stuff there. There was some stuff going on with during the draft. you know, that scouts were overruled on players that they wanted to pick because they didn't analytically match up to what the numbers were telling them. So you had that, and you then, you know, had the Donnie Rick dynamic, where understand that those two guys went to the same private school in Massachusetts 3 years apart, and they've known each other for nearly 40 years. And when Rick was hired back in the summer of 2008, Rick was the only person Donnie interviewed for the job. And it turned out to be a pretty brilliant hire, I'd say. So when Donnie was out of the picture, I think it became very easy for Rick to say, you know, Donnie's my guy. I've been with him forever. And we've been together here so long that, you know, maybe it is time to try something new.
Coop, it was announced today, just about an hour or so ago, that NBA grade champion Dirk Nowitzki, that I referenced earlier in this segment, he's going to join the club as a special advisor. Was that Dirk saying, hey, let me help you guys, and meaning let me help you guys smooth this over with Luka? Or was this Mark Cuban saying, I need somebody that our fan base trusts to stabilize things from a PR standpoint?
Is probably, let's look at it this way. Dirk has always said that he would do anything, you know, to help the Mavericks. He is the Mavericks. I mean, he is the face of the Mavericks. So, you know, when he retired a couple of years ago, he did not want to be involved on an everyday basis. He wanted to live his life. He'd, you know, been so dedicated to his craft for 21 years that he needed a break. And now he comes back, and it's not like he's back full time as a whatever that term means, special advisor. I mean, I think he's here to help advise Mark, just as the search firm is advising Mark on, you know, who should be hired. And, you know, look, Dirk and Luka do have a really good relationship, and that's a really nice part of all this. But I really think at this point that this is Dirk being asked to help step in and do the right thing until they can get this whole thing sorted out.
Chuck Cooperstein, Dallas Mavericks play-by-play guy, also with ESPN Dallas in Dallas, Texas, on the Technicom hotline here with Nick Wilson and Stan Norfleet. Chuck, looking at the Luka part of this, because the second any turbulence hits an organization now in the NBA, it is, especially with a contract coming up, what does that mean for that guy's future? So what is the level of concern around Dallas that this in some way jeopardizes Luka's long-term plans as being a Mavericks player?
Well, the fan base is hysterical, but the hysterics are totally uncalled for. Luke's already said he's going to sign his contract. You know, it's a guaranteed $200 million. You know, we had a situation here a few years ago with Nerlens Noel, when Nerlens Noel turned down guaranteed $70 million for 4 years and then basically couldn't even get a minimum contract. Luke is not that dumb, okay? Luke is going to take, he's going to take the money. But what all of this means, and really, and it would have been the case had none of this taken place, is that the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on this team to try to put the correct parts around Luka so that they can, you know, not only finally get out of the first round, but really contend for a championship in his time that he's here. So, I mean, if he signs a five-year deal, figure that there'll be a player option on the final year. He's on the last year of his original rookie contract next year. So basically, I mean, you're looking at the next, you know, 4 to 4.5 years for the Mavericks to try to get something done for him. He's not going anywhere. I mean, I find it laughable, you know, when you go around social media and you hear talk radio and think, well, you know, Luka, he's angling to get his way out of here. To my knowledge, nothing could be further from the truth, because he's going to sign the deal. Whenever that happens, probably after the general manager and the coach are named.
Chuck, tell me about two guys that we have our eyes on here in Charlotte, at least some of us. Kristaps Porzingis, been on the NBA rumor wire. Maybe Mitch Kupchak, our GM, might take a run at him. And a guy that my partner Nick Wilson and I have discussed, I'd love me some Tim Hardaway Jr. playing alongside Melo at that shooting guard spot. Give me a real scouting report on those two real quick.
Well, I mean, if you're interested, if Mitch Kupchak is interested in Porzingis, what is he giving? What does Charlotte have that the Mavericks want?
You tell me. What do you need?
You tell me because you know if they're the ones that are asking, they're the ones that are going to have to be giving something up. So, what does Charlotte want to give up?
All right, Nick, help me with this. Terry Rozier.
I got a second rounder. You like second rounders, Chuck?
Not really.
Terry Rozier and PJ Washington. Give me Porzingis.
Not going to happen.
Terry Rozier, PJ Washington, and this year's 11.
Better.
So it sounds like Mark Cuban and what we believe, and again, there's no front office structure there right now, per se, and whoever this gentleman is, this phantom GM, whatever he's got going on, what it sounds like is, would you call it unlikely that Porzingis is moved this offseason?
Yes. I would say it's extremely unlikely that he'll be moved. I know his exit interview was excellent with both Donnie and with Rick, and that you know, the commitment to you know get stronger and go into an off season without any injury issues it's the first time in forever that's been the case for him. And you know, listen, they have so much invested in him. I mean, to me. Just to me, now this is not what the Mavericks are thinking, but to me, it would be insane to give up on that so soon into the investment when, you know, yes, he did not have a good playoff at all. But when you look at when he played this year, he averaged 20-9. He had his best shooting numbers of his career this year. The defense was really the far more problematic issue because he wasn't moving as well. He wasn't the rim protector that he was last year, even though, ironically enough, at one time in early April, he was in the top 10 in the league in block shots. But his overall defense wasn't quite what it needs to be. But again, you know, how much of that was the lack of practice time? How much of it was, you know, him coming off of the off-season surgery? And then, you know, coming back for the playoffs, you know, when he got hurt, you know, late in the season and missed 10 games, you know, just how right was he? So, I mean, there are just so many questions that if I'm the Mavericks, this is me, not them, but this is me, you know, I'm waiting as long as I possibly can to find out that, you know what, this doesn't work, that it's just not going to happen. Because what we did see last year in the bubble, prior, especially in the bubble, but even going back to you know, January of 20, until play was stopped in March, Porzingis was an absolute monster at the five. He was literally unstoppable. And I think that's the player that they believed that they were getting. They didn't quite get that player this year. But that doesn't mean that he can't be that player again. And he's still going to be 26 years old on August 2nd. I mean, I don't know why you would give up on him. And as far as Hardaway is concerned, Hardaway played himself into some money for sure. I mean, he's been really, really good the last 2 years. He's very streaky, but when he is on, it is really something to watch. You know, unfortunately for the Mavericks, you know, while I mean he had some amazing games early on in the Clippers series, you know, the last couple of games were not really good in that series. But that's you know what you're getting with him, but. You know, the last 2 years playing next to Luka, he's had the best three-point shooting numbers of his career. I mean, like, not even close. You know, just a really consistent, hard-nosed player that will take the charge. And he does have a toughness about him that will stand any playoff team in good stead. I think he's definitely earned some money. But at the same time, I think, you know, he's already made $19 million this year with the Mavericks. And I think he knows playing next to Doncic, he will get all of the good looks that he could possibly ask for. I think you would need to really money with him to get him out of Dallas because I think the Mavericks really do, they do desire him. And, you know, which is something that when the whole trade went down in January of 19, that we never would have expected.
Follow this man right now on Twitter, at Coop Mavs. Chuck Cooperstein, Dallas Mavericks play-by-play man, 103.3 FM, ESPN Dallas. Coop, you're a legend. You were fantastic. We appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
Coop, you the man. You too, brother.
Good man there. Chuck Cooperstein of the Technicom Hotline. Millions have been vaccinated. They are safe, effective, and free. Get the facts you need at mecnc.gov. We'll be keeping an eye on that Dallas situation, but we've got to talk about the five games that ended up changing the Panthers' trajectory on Sports Radio FNC. Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. We've got another listen of the Hack Song of the Week. You're going to want to listen to it. It's either so bad it's good, or it's so good it's bad. You be the judge, coming up in 20 minutes. But, Stan, it's been interesting as we are now fully ensconced. Now that OTAs, mandatory OTAs, are done, the light jogs of yesterday are done.
Hillman and Jersey.
just a little bit of running. Don't worry about it. Except for when that coach screams at you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been interesting to think back to what's happened in Panthers football for the last 6 to 9 months. And we can really go back and look at the moment that changed the Panthers' trajectory. And it was the final five games of the year where Teddy Bridgewater was very clearly injured, but Teddy did not play very well. And more importantly, nobody else, no other element of the roster was ready to uplift Teddy Bridgewater.
So you put it solely December, those five in a row right there. There weren't any of those early games that you said, we let that one get away?
Well, no. Those absolutely, because it was a trend that they weren't able to buck throughout the year. But how you finish is essentially becomes the most recent narrative about you is the thing that basically becomes the narrative about you. And the fact that they became a lot less competitive in the month of December and those final five games, I do think that's what decided a lot of this last offseason and a lot of their moves at quarterback and otherwise.
See, for me, I don't look at it that way. Here's how I choose to look at it. There was a five-game losing streak from week 6 to week 10. Chicago at New Orleans, Atlanta at Kansas City versus Tampa. Tampa was the only game that got away. That was a 23-point defeat. The other four were a touchdown or less. That's where it got away.
So this is why I say the final five games, and I'm not talking even the because there was the Detroit game,
right,
which Teddy Bridgewater missed.
Correct. That was a P.J. Walker start.
Mm-hmm. I point to the final five games of the season, not as the Panthers' final five, as Teddy Bridgewater's final five.
Mm-hmm.
And for one reason or another, Teddy, this is about 2 days ago, meeting with the Broncos media at OTAs, as he's now out there in Denver trying to beat out Drew Lock to be the starting quarterback.
Right.
He was asked about where he's at and how he feels in Denver, and then it got into a conversation about how his health was. And I think this is a really interesting comment for one reason or another from Teddy Bridgewater on his injury last year.
You know, honestly, last year, man, I look back, I think for like the first 8 weeks or the first 7 weeks of the season, I think I was playing some really good football. And, you know, we had guys who were having career years. And I think once we played Tampa that second game and, you know, I took a shot, I probably should have just shut it down for the rest of the season.
And the more I thought about his answer, which is I probably should have just shut it down went full John Taffer after the injury to the knee after the Tampa Bay game.
Mm-hmm.
The more I thought about this and the more when you and I talked about this, the reality that hit me is the reason why Teddy Bridgewater's final five games in a Panthers uniform changed the trajectory of this organization and this offseason is that if we cut off Teddy at that Tampa Bay game, I think Teddy Bridgewater, the numbers through 10 games, I think Teddy Bridgewater is still the starting quarterback of the Carolina Panthers, and I don't think they make the trade for Sam Darnold.
I do, too. Now, follow the money. That means Teddy's back this year. Now, we wouldn't have the number 8 overall pick, right, if he continues to play at that level. With the win against Washington, the controversial win against Washington, suppose they did go on a little run. Would it have been enough to make the playoffs?
Oh, no. What I'm saying is, if Teddy had shut it down after the Tampa Bay game, I think they lose all the way out.
I
think PJ takes over, and that's with respect to the Detroit game. But they lose all the way out. I don't think it precludes them from taking, if you ended up 4-12, I don't think it precludes you from taking a Trey Lance or I think 3 is as high as they could have got. So I don't think it precludes you from Trey Lance. But I do think it stops you from feeling the need that Teddy Bridgewater's why you lost all those close games.
Yeah, Teddy's still the quarterback here, and with the number 3 pick, they're doing something else. Whether it's Penei Sewell, which I'm guessing would have been the pick. My point is, I think Teddy would have still been here because the sample size would have been those 10 games where he was completing, what, some 70% of his passes and his touchdown-interception ratio was 2-1. And listen, we talk about 4 players on this offense having 1,000 yards from scrimmage. First time in Panthers history. But we don't give Teddy any of the credit for that. Mm-hmm. That 10-game sample size was a big reason why those guys were getting money. So I think the whole dynamic would be different. And imagine the cap space that we would have by not exercising Sam Darnold's fifth-year option. Maybe that's another starter that would have been added to this roster in free agency because you still had to pay Teddy to leave.
The one thing I can't tell from listening to Teddy Bridgewater talking to the Denver media saying I probably should have shut it out, or I probably shouldn't have been out there. Mm-hmm. I probably should have shut it down after the knee injury in week 10 to Tampa Bay. The thing I cannot tell for the life of me is whether this is Teddy, it's that subtle Teddy shade again, or whether it is just Teddy addressing how it impacted him moving forward. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause in the piece where he talked with Bryant McFadden on the podcast.
Right, All Things Covered. Yeah, him and Patrick Peterson.
It was pretty obvious that he wasn't quite over things. He was still feeling some type of way about that situation.
Wouldn't you? Figuratively.
Would.
Yeah, I'm just saying most people I think would. Listen, let's call this what it is. Just like Kimba's being the fall guy in Boston, Teddy was the fall guy for the organization this year. And Teddy knows he doesn't deserve all of that. He says in the podcast, in the interview, he says, yeah, there are some things I could have done better. Paraphrasing, but all this ain't on me. And he's using this separate interview from Denver as a sample size to say, when you look at the numbers, he has a leg to stand on there. The thing that, and I asked you this, where my thought went was, to me it was Cam Newton. Remember when Cam was like, you know, in hindsight, he should have done something different with the foot in terms of the decision making? I wonder how much of this was Teddy saying, I should have told Matt Rhule I can't go and push through this, or how much of this was Matt Rhule, look, we need to make a really good first impression, get your keister back out there and play good ball.
I tend to put this on – so the Ron thing's a little different. Because Ron and Cam had been together for 8 years, and Ron's, I don't want to say a problem, Ron trusted Cam,
yeah,
and Cam was trying to brave it out.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I do think it's on the player, because I think coaches can pressure players, but like if you're Teddy, you're in year one of a 3-year contract.
But they gave him a ton of cash, Nick.
No, they did, and I understand that, but... There's like Matt Rhule can't threaten you with cutting you. You shouldn't feel threatened by PJ Walker or Will Greer. Like, Teddy made the decision because he wanted to be it was a leadership move. That's what he wanted it to be. And it backfired. But like, I can't look at Matt Rhule. If somebody tells you you can go, I don't know I can hammer the coach for then putting the player out there, because in the end, the player has to look after himself, knowing that the team won't.
Well, I think Teddy is very aware. Teddy knew this team had no shot of success consistently with either P.J. Walker or Will Grier going out there. I think you and I both, and I can tell you for certainty the conversations I've had with guys that have made the Teddy Bridgewater money and more, guys do feel pressure to live up to the contract, to live up to the guaranteed money. So guys will do some things that may not make sense in the physical to try and push through for the sake of the optics, for the sake of justification, and for the sake, to your point, there are a whole bunch of guys in that locker room that are pushing through. It also made me think, giving it back to you, if Teddy and C-Mac wanted to both push through, which we both know they're competitive and they likely wanted to, why was C-Mac shut down? Why didn't they let him push through?
Well, because one guy actually had value. 704-570-9610. Teddy Bridgewater admits he should have shut it down after the knee injury. In hindsight, he should have practiced self-preservation after the Tampa Bay injury. How would that change where the Panthers are now? Would the Panthers have been better or worse? I don't think they would have been competitive without Teddy, even with the way he played down the stretch. And I think because of how good he looked the first 10 games, I think that means he's probably still here. And I think that's something Stan and I agree on. Millions have been vaccinated. They are safe, effective, and free. Get the facts you need at mechnc.gov. A. Sherrod Blakely, a respectable man, NBA writer for the Bleacher Report, amongst others. He joins us next to break down what went wrong in Boston. For Kemba Walker, Sports Radio FNC.